Thank you for including me in this panel. It's terrific to be here and to hear this, the presentations about the connections, and I'm looking forward to the questions that you all, I assume, are also going to have about the connections. So I'm going to talk largely about family planning in the Sustainable Development Goals, where it fits, what else we need to be doing, and how much progress we've made and still need to make to get there. My overarching point here is that advancing reproductive health and family planning can positively influence and advance a number of sustainable development priorities. And that when we think about the world we want, it's a world that includes reproductive rights and universal access to family planning. There are 225 million women in the world in developing countries who have an unmet need for contraception, meaning that they want to space or limit childbearing but aren't using a modern method of contraception to do that. They want to control their fertility and often lack the means, the access, the agency to do that. And helping women and couples choose the number, timing, and spacing of their pregnancies is not just a matter of human rights, which there are, fits into these SDGs, but touches on many issues vital to sustainable development, and we'll get to that in a second. Certainly, universal access to family planning is not the singular route to any of this, but without addressing family planning and population issues, the impact and effectiveness of what the other SDGs are trying to accomplish is going to be much less. So one of the things that's terrific about family planning from my perspective is that it's connected to so many things, and you can usually find an issue that somebody is interested in and connect it back to family planning or start with family planning and get to what they're interested in. So one of the earlier speakers noted that these SDGs cluster into environmental, social, and economic, and family planning's impacts can be clustered the same way. Lots of really significant health benefits come from expanding access to family planning, including reducing maternal morbidity and mortality, infant and child mortality, and reducing abortion, and also helping to reduce HIV transmission. On the more social and economic side, the ability to choose when you want to have your children and how many you're going to have allows women to stay in school, to participate in the workforce, for families to spend more of their resources on the quality of their children. And also, family planning programs mitigate the adverse effects of population dynamics on natural resources, economic growth, and state stability. But underneath all that, there has to be a guiding principle around voluntarism and informed choice that puts the responsibility and the opportunity to take action in the hands of the woman and not in the hands of the state or some higher order entity. So it's really important as we think about how we want to achieve some of these goals that family planning is part of to keep that in mind, that working from what women and families want should be the basis of that. So I have the third sort of presentation today of these 17 goals in color, but not as nicely presented as the pictures. So I don't think I need to say too much about how many there are here or sort of the points about universality, et cetera, that have been made. But I do want to say a little bit about, well, where does family planning fit in all of this? You don't see it in any of the wording up here. However, it is key to two of the goals in particular, one around ensuring healthy lives and promoting well-being for all at all ages, that's goal 3, and goal 5, achieving gender equality and empowering all women and girls. And just to give you a little bit of a sense of what's underneath these, Goal 3 one includes reducing the global maternal mortality ratio, ending preventable deaths of newborns and under 5 children, ending the epidemics of AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, and neglected tropical diseases, reducing by 1/3 premature mortality. It goes on and on. When you get down to the 7th one, you have ensure universal access to sexual and reproductive health care services, including for family planning information and education and the integration of reproductive health into national strategies and programs. So it's way down buried in there. It's not a goal. It's barely a target. And we hope there's going to be a strong indicator. But I think it's worth noting that if you look at the list of goals that family planning and reproductive health is not included in or not relevant to in some way or another, you come up with nothing. You can connect it to all of these and making progress across all of them has a connection to the kind of progress we can make around family planning and reproductive health. So I want to, from here, dive into family planning specifically for a little bit, talk about a proposed metric around family planning, some of the progress that we've made to date, and what USAID sees as some directions we should be going towards in the future with respect to family planning. So if we step back for a minute to the MDGs, under MDG 5, 8 years late, we had MDG 5B around achieving universal access to reproductive health. So it wasn't there at the start. It was a really hard fight to get it there, and there's a lot of unfinished business. And you can see the range of indicators that were proposed at the time for MDG 5B. As we think about post-2015 and these SDG goals for 2030, the notion of sexual and reproductive health and rights in addition to reproductive health comes into the picture. And the process is really just beginning of thinking about indicators. We at USAID have spent a fair amount of time thinking specifically about what an appropriate family planning indicator could be, but we want to be really clear that we don't think measuring progress in family planning by itself is adequate for measuring what can fit under a much broader target around sexual and reproductive health and rights. So we're engaged in some of the rest of those conversations, and we encourage the community to really be thinking about what else we might want to measure. But to stay on the family planning measure for a minute, we're proposing a measure that looks at the percent of demand for family planning that is satisfied with modern contraception. So that means of those sexually active women of reproductive age who don't want to become pregnant, the percent that are using modern contraceptives. And you can see how to calculate that in terms of modern contraceptive use over total contraceptive use plus unmet need, underpinned by these principles of voluntarism, informed choice, equity, and rights. And in addition to proposing an indicator, we've proposed a benchmark for that indicator as well, which is that at least 75% of the demand is satisfied with modern contraception in all countries by 2030. So we were looking for something that would be ambitious and achievable, that had this notion of universality to it, that would mean something in high-income countries and low-income countries. We came up with the 75% because it's near the average today of OECD countries, and we believe other countries can get there. And it's got equity dimensions to it and can incentivize countries to really think about the equity dimensions of it, looking across wealth, age, residence, and other factors so that you don't have to just take it as a single indicator at one level. You can really dive in below that. We looked at how it's distributed across the world today in terms of where countries are on their modern contraceptive use, which is the x-axis, and then what proportion of demand is satisfied. So the big gray circles are regional circles. The triangles are OECD countries. The red squares are the least developed countries. And then you have all other kinds of countries in between in the circles. And you can see that it's fairly widely distributed. I would argue that even in countries that are above that target line now at an aggregate level, there are plenty of subpopulations in there that still need to be reached, and that could be the area that high-income countries that are far along could really be focusing on. But if you look at developing countries in particular, and this next slide looks specifically at countries that are priority countries for USAID, they're pretty much in that lower left-hand corner of the graphic. We have 24 priority countries that we focus on, 9 countries that are part of something called the Ouagadougou Partnership, which is West African Francophone countries. And then some of the countries we've gotten out of fairly recently, you can see as the yellow triangles. But there's a lot of work to do still to get countries up to over 75% of demand met. Now, getting to 2030, it's only 15 years away, and it is a long way to 15 years from now. So I think a benchmark along the way relates to Family Planning 2020, the global effort to enable an additional 120 million women worldwide, women and girls, to use family planning. And the progress towards that goal is not on the trajectory that it needs to be on to get us there. So measuring just 1 year into it, comparing 2013 to 2012, we're not making progress as fast as we need to be. And so I think a key goal going forward needs to be to try to work on ways to accelerate progress in developing countries. So I think I want to look now at four different indicators related to family planning: the modern contraceptive prevalence rate and the met demand, which we've already talked about, as well as the proportion of births that are spaced at least 3 years apart and first births to women under 18, which connect family planning to some of the issues that are in the higher order targets and goals in the SDGs of maternal and child mortality. And I'm going to show you four tables that have countries sorted into categories in terms of their rate of progress between their last two demographic and health surveys. And there are a few countries in each that have either four checks or three checks next to them, or two or three X's. And the checks are countries that are doing well across three or four of the indicators, and the X's are those that are doing badly across two or three of the indicators. And you'll see that even though there are countries that have made quite a bit of progress, there are a lot of countries that still have a long way to go. So we'll start with modern contraceptive prevalence. And you can see that there are 13 or so countries out of 24 priority countries for USAID that have increased contraceptive prevalence at least one percentage point between the last two DHS surveys. And historical progress suggests that a really strong family planning program can achieve and sustain an increase of 1 to 2 percentage points a year. And there are some outliers here that have made amazing progress, like Rwanda, much faster. I think now going into a second five-year period, that's still quite an amazing rate, but we'll see how long they can maintain that. Nonetheless, it's a pretty good list of countries here, and you can see that Ethiopia and Senegal are the ones that are going to show up on the next few slides as also staying in this category. On the other hand, at the other end, we have some countries that are making very little progress or are kind of going in the wrong direction. And we need to really look inside those countries and understand what's going on. I will say about going in the wrong direction, historically anyway, there are very few countries that have a declining contraceptive prevalence rate for more than a five-year period. So I think there's good reason to believe that these countries are going to make better progress going forward. They're just not doing so well right now. There's quite a strong relationship between modern contraceptive use and the proportion of demand satisfied. So you see many of the same countries in the same parts of the list for this indicator as well. But I think these next two, the proportion of demands of births that are spaced 36 months apart, or in this case, it's spaced less than, so you want the number to be going down, and the proportion of births that are to women under 18, suggest where programs really are or are not well focused. Because you don't see countries distributed quite the same way for these indicators as for the other two. So you still have Senegal in there doing really super well in terms of reducing the proportion of births that are spaced 36 months apart. But you see a much larger category that's in the middle there doing fine but not doing terrifically well, and some more countries in this category of getting worse. I will say that for getting worse, most of those countries are countries where there's been really no change at all in the proportion of births that are spaced less than 36 months apart. And here we have first births to women under 18. And I think it's clear from this slide in particular that part of what we're seeing is that even though there are countries that are making good progress on prevalence and met demand, some of those countries really don't have programs that are targeted to young women. And going forward, thinking about what the world is going to look like a generation from now, it's those young people we really need to be focusing on if we want to have lasting change. So this is an area that I think a lot of countries need to be thinking about. So moving back up again, sort of to a larger global picture, we just did in the office 2 weeks ago a portfolio review for our senior management, and we were asked to provide a perspective on what we thought the world's goals around each of our technical areas were. So we put together the ones for family planning, and we talked about them with respect to 2030, 2020, and what the world could be working to do this year to move forward towards those. So not surprisingly, you'll see this 75% of demand met for family planning as a 2030 goal in the context of achieving the health-related SDGs, and also this idea of seeing family planning and reproductive health routinely included in universal health coverage, where it is often left out. It belongs in there, and it can be done in there in a way that protects voluntarism and informed choice. And universal health coverage is actually one of these SDGs that needs focus. And along the way, we want to try and reach this FP 2020 goal. And some of the things we think we need to be working on this year as a community are getting countries on that 2020 track and really fighting hard for the inclusion of family planning in the SDGs, even at the level of just an indicator. Looking even more internally for USAID, for us, we see that meaning focusing on these 24 countries. EPCMD stands for Ending Preventable Maternal and Child and Maternal Deaths, and you heard me mention those two things when I was talking about Goal 3. That's an overarching focus for USAID. Thinking about 2020, and moving towards achieving the FP 2020 goals, the ending preventable child and maternal death goals, and achieving an AIDS-free generation, helping countries speed that progress around family planning, meet the commitments they made to FP 2020, and try and make sure that there's a method mix out there that represents the reproductive desires that women have. So that if you want to stop having kids because you've had the number of children you want to have, in your country, you have access to long-acting, reversible, or permanent contraception. And if you don't want to take the pill every day for the next 15 years of your life because you've had your two kids, you don't have to. But that expanded access to an expanded range of methods is a big issue. So for 2015, we need to keep the countries that are moving forward strongly moving forward. We need to help those countries that aren't performing very well move faster. We want to build this evidence around the links between family planning and ending preventable child and maternal deaths. That maternal mortality, child mortality picture is a very persuasive argument with a lot of policymakers. People can understand that you don't want women and kids to die. Another very effective argument is around the demographic dividend and the opportunities for economic growth. And then we, USAID and UNFPA, as the two largest donors out there providing family planning assistance, want to have a much closer working relationship to try to make these happen. So there's definitely a job still to do. It comes from my perspective in this sort of family planning lens around securing sexual and reproductive health and rights in the SDGs, getting some agreement around metrics, and accelerating progress in satisfying demand for family planning. And because I don't want you to think it's just me who thinks that family planning is a good way to go. It's been labeled and assessed as a best buy in development, both in terms of the Lancet Commission on Economics and Health, which has noted that expanding access to contraception will be a particularly cost-effective investment, potentially accounting for half of all the deaths that could be prevented in an accelerated investment scenario, and that the payoff for spending money on access to contraception is really high. So I will just go back to my point that there are really none of these SDGs that can be moved along as fast as they could be if we don't also take this issue into account. Thank you very much.